if we are. All right. Well, we're just waiting for Dave. We're a little early, but, you know, better to be early, right? Better to be early. Oh, look at that. That's over. Okay, let's get the show on the road, shall we? Let's see. We're going to go here. And here we got to make sure we're live first, right? Because we don't know if we're live. We could be tricked into believing we're live. Hey, Jimmy. Steven. Yep, better to be early. Yes, sirree, Bob. Yeah, because really, even if we came in 15 seconds early, it's already 90 minutes into the show, just about. It's crazy how the time goes. I mean, it's literally is crazy. I mean, you're doing this and that, and then it's, you know, you're out of time, right? You're out of luck. You're out of time. All right. I don't know if those are the right lyrics, but they're not. They should be. All right. All righty then. Ugh. Can they be hated more? I mean, that's the question. Can they be hated more? I don't know if that's possible, because they are just ugly. Just ugly. Just ugly creatures. Ugh. All right. Just ugly creatures. All right. Hello, Dr. Pepe. It's a new name here. Yes, that's right. Tempus fugit. That's right. What does that mean, goblins? Dr. Pepe. What does that mean? I was out today washing the car. It's a nice day here in Florida in the mid-70s. So very nice. Yes, 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 you're right. Goblins is even too good of a word for those creatures. I mean, they are just fucking disgusting. I don't know, Jimmy. Can we know what's really happening there if we're not there? I mean, you can bet that the Jews are not going to tell you anything. So I hope they are. It would appear from the political posturing that things are not going well for them. So, yes. It seems like, let me put it to you this way. We're not winning. We're not tired of winning. All right, dude. There you go.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Good.
Coffee time.
Yeah, you're looking good.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'm trying.
Well, I would say that you succeeded.
I'm looking forward to our next meeting. We don't have to mention where that is necessarily. Yep.
Yeah. We already did. It's already publicized, but I told you, and I told everybody, I'll know this week if I'm going to be able to attend.
What?
Yes.
I was planning to ride up with you. I'm going to be stuck if I don't get with you. I don't know. I just don't want to drive that far myself.
No, I don't blame you, man, especially with your eyesight.
Yeah.
So it's out of my control. So I'll know this week.
I thought we were all set.
We were until this happened, and it didn't unfold the way that I thought it would unfold.
It's a problem with accommodations or something else?
No, it's something else. I'll tell you privately.
All right.
What it is after the show.
Okay.
But let's let me do the intro, and then we'll get right into it.
All right. Let me see if I can get situated right here.
Yes. Yo, you look good, man. The light's good. You got that nice blue jacket, that golfing jacket on.
Ain't no golfing.
Golfing jacket. Shirt.
Golf for years. I used to be a pretty good golfer. I mean, I could play scratch a few times, you know.
The first time I played golf on an executive course, I was young.
Yeah.
I got a hole in one. I actually saw it rolling, and I was with my best friend.
Well, if that was the first time, then you're a miracle worker.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the first time, and that's why I always said,
try out for Jesus next time.
Why would I play golf? I can't top that. Well, those executive courses are smaller. So anyway, the funny part of it was
like an iron shot. Yeah.
Yeah. The funny part of it was my friend's dad was not too happy.
He had a bet?
No, I was young, but I mean, I would have thought that he would. Wow, great! Yeah, that's what you're. He was not happy.
Interesting. I had never had a hole in one, but I have. I've had a hole. I've had dozens and dozens and dozens of eagles. You know,
Really?
Yeah, I've had dozens and dozens. That was a long time ago, though.
Right.
My mom played golf. She taught me actually years ago when I was a kid. She used to play golf a lot. At City Park. I used to play at City Park as well in New Orleans.
Yes, know where it is.
$4 a round. I go out there with my buddy at about 5:30 in the morning before anybody was on the course. It was still dark. You could hardly see where your tee shot went. And then we'd have a cart, like a roller cart behind us, you know. And we used to literally – now this is hot. It's hot in New Orleans. But you just have shorts on, you know, and a t-shirt, sometimes without even a shirt, because we play early enough. There's nobody on the course. And we used to literally hit the shot. We'd take one practice swing, hit the shot, you know, and then we'd jog to the ball and we'd stop for a second and get set. One practice swing, hit the ball, and same thing with the putting. And then we'd Every shot we jogged to the wall. I mean, we were played fast. I can play 18 holes on a 7,300 yard course, with my buddy. We've done it a few times in like 48 minutes or something like that.
Speed golf.
It was speed golf, and yeah. So it was aerobic and everything. But in the summertime, so even at 4 o'clock in the morning, it was hard.
Just the humidity is just it's killer. Right? That's what it is, the humidity.
Yeah.
All right, folks, this is the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on FTJmedia.com. This is show number 58,
yes,
I believe. Yes, it is. And you can call in from anywhere in the world, except for the countries that the Jews don't like Russia and so on. I don't think you can call from Iran, but most countries. And you'll find that call-in button at the top of the FTJmedia.com website. Just click that. It opens up. Those numbers stay the same. The pins change for every show for security purposes, of course. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put in the pin here in the chat.
Right.
And I'll even put the pound sign after that. And there you go. And our ongoing challenge, of course. Mm-hmm. If anyone can let us know of a more serious and existential threat to humanity and free speech other than organized international Jewry, a.k.a. Jewish supremacism. You're not going to, there is nothing. But anyway, we'll just play along with this.
In the Dave and Dave show.
Right, right. You'll let us know and we'll quit the show right away. That's it. You're not going to come up with it. So there you go. Dave, what's on your mind, buddy?
How can I have anything on my mind but this insane, horrific war? We've already got Americans dying. It's going to, and people have to understand something. What we're doing to Iran is absolutely criminal. I mean, the first day out, we literally murdered. And there's no excuse for dropping a high precision weapon on a school. If you're gonna drop these three or four weapons on some facility or what's next to a facility, you got to do your homework, right? You got to definitely scan and see what's around it. I mean, what is that other building? Is that a military thing or is it? Is it a school? Is it an elementary school? A girls' school? A girls' and they always mess up the ages. They keep now. They just said the other day, 7 and 12. It really wasn't. It was, from what I understand from my friends in the Iran I talked to. I was lucky to get through to a couple of them, and it was the school was really about 6 years old to about mainly 11, 12 years old, like that. And they just murdered them, 174, and there were maybe 160 children. The rest were teachers, and they did a double tap. So what they did was is they bombed it, and so parents started coming in. They contacted the parents. They started coming in a few minutes trying to look for their children, and then they did it again. That's the idea. That's when you want to get all the healthcare workers and the medics and people trying to search for the bodies.
Like they did on the USS Liberty. Same thing.
Yeah, exactly the same thing. Horrific thing. However, these were school kids. And I tell you something, just as bad to kill fathers, right? A lot of them fathers are just innocent young men. Half of those men at the Liberty were probably under 25.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yep. More than half. Almost all of them were.
Yeah. And they got the whole life ahead of them. We lost 34, right? And we had lost 178, was it, wounded?
No, actually.
250.
No, the crew was 294. So yeah. 34 were murdered. 31 of them were sailors.
Yeah.
Two Marines, one civilian, and, two civilians, one Marine. And the rest of the crew, 260, were wounded mentally and physically. So the whole crew, obviously, was wounded. That's the way we should look at it, not just the ones who applied for benefits.
Because there's so many lies, we should always, when we discuss things like this, just recount the facts for people so they understand, okay? All right, in the first place, Iran did nothing wrong, Iran joined the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They agreed to do that. They agreed to inspections when they decided to have nuclear energy. They allowed inspections. And then they had an agreement, you know, in fact, this very special agreement, a hardcore agreement, which other countries didn't have to have as in terms of a very intense inspections, including they knew it was going to be agents for Israel and America going to be infiltrating the team. But they allowed inspections, and so they had the International Atomic Energy Commission. It wasn't composed of Iranians or Arabs or Palestinians or Lebanese. It was composed of international, mainly Europeans, and including some Americans. And they could go anywhere they wanted. And in all those years, they never found them one time, not even one time, in violation of any of the rules, not one time. And in fact, we had a what's called a national security a national intelligence and security evaluation. Now, what that is, it's done by the office of the federal office, national security, which is what Tulsi Gabbard is head of right now. And they had this thing, which is the 17 top intelligence agencies in the United States. So it's all of our intelligence apparatus, the CIA, the FBI, everything, naval intelligence, army intel, everything. And all these agencies give what they call a national intelligence estimate. And they did one in Iran every few months, right? And in the decades of this agreement, they didn't find one time there was never an agreement or never an intelligence estimate ever that they were, you know, violating their obligations or that they were making an atomic bomb or trying to, doing anything in violation. But this, you know, but the Jews wanted to destroy it. They wanted to get us into war for years and years, and they got us into a war, just like they got us into the Iraq war. But the irony and the hypocrisy, I'll tell you something. I think as a young man, I think all of us that are interested in truth and freedom and knowing what's really afoot in our country or our government, or even just individuals, one thing that everybody really detests is hypocrisy. I mean, nothing's worse than hypocrisy and lies. And the hypocrisy in this instance is so freaking great. So Iran signed up for the NPT. They signed up for the chemical weapons treaty, so they couldn't have any chemical weapons, even though America had a lot of them, by the way. We still had a lot of them buried, and they were still doing research in it. They signed up for the biological weapons treaty as well. And by the way, this is another important fact that we've been doing biological weapons. That's probably where we got COVID. It was Fort Detrick's in this country, you know, biological weapons. And because we did that biological weapons development by calling it preventative measures against viruses. We have to explore these viruses and these dangerous, deathly viruses that can be targeted, in fact, to certain ethnic groups by their DNA, which is horrific, which is a horrific weapon if you think about it. I mean, that is what's the word for it? A maniac or an ultra-racist, you know, wet dream, right? But we know who the ultimate racists are in this world, and that's Jewish, you know, the Jewish, what we talk about every week on this show and every day on my show is the holy seed. That's what the Bible calls 225 times the holy seed, which translates in Hebrew to the holy semen. It's kind of funny. Somehow holy semen doesn't sound as noble as holy seed. And the holy seed is that Jews are superior. They're the only human beings, really. Everybody else is not. Everybody else is an animal. Gentiles are lesser, like cattle. It's literally what they say. And lower animals. And in addition to Gentiles being like cattle and lower animals, so they're a different species. I mean, literally, that's what they say in what's called the Zohar, which is the doctrine of Chabad Lubavitch, by the way. And Chabad Lubavitch is the largest Jewish organization on a global basis in this world. Chabad Lubavitch has almost 1 million followers all over the world. Every major capital of the world of any nation of any size has Chabad Lubavitch, usually in their capital cities, trying to infiltrate and influence government, influence media, all those things, because they're all working for Jewish supremacy over the whole world. And Chabad Lubavitch is, so there's 15, 16 million Jews, according to their census, all over the world. There's 1 million Jews in Chabad Lubavitch. And I got pictures of them in practically every government executive office, including swarming around Trump like bees in a honeycomb, you know? I mean, it's disgusting. And the ironic thing is, it's right in the White House. Jared Kushner.
How about if we ever tried to get in the White House?
I think they'd make up an excuse and kill us on the way
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
But here's the thing. Now, you got to think about this. We always are talking about hypocrisy. We're always talking about this fake reality we have in the world. Now, Chabad Lubavitch, the head guy, was named Schneerson, Rabbi Mendelssohn Schneerson. Good, perfect name for him. I like to sneer at him, so whenever I call his name, I'm sneering at him. But anyway, his name is Schneerson, and he did a Conversations, which is published in Israel and translated and published in the world in both the English language and Hebrew. And in that book, he literally says that when we think about Jews and Gentiles, Jews and non-Jews, we have to use the term, we must differentiate. And he went on to say that Gentiles are completely different physical forms than Jews. In fact, he said they're a different species, a lower species. They are the animal kingdom, by the way, which means if they denote 99.8% of the world to be animals, that basically means, isn't that what they called the Palestinians after October 7, animals? Even though Jews, by the way, to keep the record straight here, when Jews invaded Gaza two or three times, they killed far more than the number of people that died in October 7, and they killed exponentially more Palestinian children that were killed in the raid in Israel on October 7, which is very significant. And you know what? The number of children that died, and any child that dies is a terrible thing. Nobody wants any child to die ever. But they killed hundreds and hundreds of children and innocent mothers and their raids before. This is before October 7. Thousands of people, actually. Massive bombings, massive horrors, right? And in the October 7 raid, I believe of the 26, there were 26 total children die. Now, if you compare that to Cast Lead, which was one of their operations in Gaza, and you compare it to Protective Edge, we're talking about thousands, men, women, and children die. And by the way, the Israeli government says that there was a total of about 19,000 Hamas fighters in Gaza. Now, I want you to just think of the arithmetic now. 19,000. That's 19,000 out of 2.4 million Palestinians in Gaza. 19,000 out of 2.4 million. And if you think about that in a real sense, right, and then you look at a death toll, the official death toll, they say, is 70,000 people died. That's the official Israeli death toll. In reality, we all know it's far more than that. Look at the total devastation. They have not been able to even go through the ruins. You know, the way.
No, there's bodies. Big bodies. There's bodies rotting under the rubble.
Oh, they're already rotted out, and they've been probably eaten by scavenging dogs.
Well, they're continuing to kill hundreds more. They don't stop.
Well, yes, and by the way, as anybody knows that studies this, they also stopped. First of all, I want to let's just talk about the evil of Israel for a second. So everybody knows you can share this to your friends and family when they start talking about this bullshit and they're talking through their ass rather than talking through their brain. But the Israeli government admitted, broadcast, their own media said that they were destroying the desalting plants for the water, because they have to have that because they have
desalinization.
And also they were bombing and destroying the sanitation of the cause, which causes disease, obviously. They are also just even attacking the water purity stuff, plants. I mean, they were blocking any food, any clean water from coming in. They were blocking obviously destroying the electricity grid, and electricity is very important for people. Obviously, they were stopping any commerce, so they had no money to basically buy anything. They were also banning any sort of medicine, any sort of antibiotics, which they needed. Because let me tell you something, when you get hit and you lose an arm or a leg or a hand or anything, your eyes or whatever, if you don't get antibiotics, you basically are walking around with a death warrant. Now, you know this because you served in the military, so you know all about these things. Years ago, until the penicillin and antibiotics were developed about, you know, in a lot of part of the First World War, until that took place, the death toll was enormously greater than it was since that time. Because anytime, you know, you always see these cowboy movies and these war movies in the old times, and they see people getting in, shot in the leg and the arm and well, and they, you know, they're back in the saddle very soon. And, you know, no, they're really not most of the time. I mean, if they get any sort of infection without antibiotics, their death rate is horrific, right? And then they get gangrene, start growing. That's one reason why so many soldiers have amputations. And it's one reason why so many amputations took place. The fact is, in Gaza, this is another horrible statistic, that there's no place on earth of that population, no place on the planet of that size population, 2.4 million, that has as many children who have
amputees.
That's right. Amputated arms, legs, quad amputated, both arms. I mean, the issue, blinded.
They're just torsos, a lot of them.
It's horrible. It's insane to think about. No place on earth has a bigger percentage of that than Gaza. And this is not accidental. There was a good study. There's been, I must say, there's a lot of brave men and women from around the world who've been exceptionally brave, not only in terms of risking their lives and themselves being wounded or emasculated. I mean, you can think of the worst things. They're taken prisoner by these monsters in the Israeli death camps and the Israeli torture chambers. Guess what they are? By the way, the other day, the Israelis, you know, that big story, because it was shown in video on Israeli television. So there were 11, I think, Israeli guards charged with torture raping, basically, a Palestinian. They did many more than that. This is just one of the ones they caught. One of the people bravely released the video of this horrible event. And they had taken this man. I hate to give the details, but we can give the detail on our network without worry about we need to. It's, if you got children, take them in the other room for a second. But this particular victim was raped by putting long rifle barrels, and with all the things on it too, you know, up their anus, perforating their colon, even perforating their lungs. I mean, you can't even make this horror up. You can imagine the torture that must have been. That's like sodomy plus, right? And just it's so evil. It's unbelievable. And it was so bad. I was lucky enough. I don't know how they did it. I'm surprised they just didn't die there. But somebody said, we got to send him to the hospital. So they sent him to the hospital. And then another Israeli, at least some of them have a conscience there. It's rare. There are some Israelis that have a conscience on these matters, but you got to go through one in the 200 or 300 to find one that would actually, or maybe one in 1,000.
Yeah, no, probably more than that.
Well, I'm talking about one in 1,000 who.
No, more than one in 1,000. One in a million.
Oh, I see. More than that in the bad way. Well, I don't know. I mean, one in a million probably risks their own career and life to do that, because the prosecutor in the case, by the way, first of all, the so-called defendants, right? They all were found not guilty and released. Yet they had videos proving they were homicidally, viciously sodomizing this pal, torturing him by raping him anally, causing damage to his, almost killing him. You can't even make this up. And they all got set free. Now, we also, you can see some videos. In fact, we can bring up a video. You're good on this. Let's go do a search.
Before we do that, we got a call.
I will, but first, I just want to give you the status you can put in your...
Yeah, I'll search for it while the call's in.
All right.
What do you want?
Jimmy Dore show, and just talk about the trial of the Israeli rapists.
And okay. Is he on YouTube, this guy?
On YouTube, yeah.
Okay. Henry, go ahead, buddy.
Henry, how you doing, my friend?
Oh, hello.
We don't have to mention where it is, but I'm looking forward to seeing you, my friend, later on.
I don't
even mention a date today and which meeting it is, because that is not good for you or anyone.
Well, we'll see what happens with it. And there's developments, but you'll hear about it.
Okay.
Well, it will tell you. Well, but my question,
I'm sure we're monitored by the enemy. Go ahead.
Repeat, please.
Don't reveal the details, because I'm sure our enemies, monitor things like this program for wherever they can find.
Dave asked me. So my question is, a mixed person came to me and asked me, what should he do? He doesn't fit in the white society with white people, and he doesn't fit in the Asian society with Asian people, and he doesn't fit in with black people.
Yeah.
And so he's like, and he doesn't want to, he doesn't also want to, live for the people where he lives. He doesn't want to live with these people for the people whose land it is, who are indigenous to these lands. So what should he do? What's his options?
Well, that's going to be his choice, of course. I would say to him that, is he a European?
Well, he's mixed.
He's mixed. Okay. He's mixed. Well, there's certainly places, whether he's European or mixed or whatever, where he can live among other people. I'll give you an example. In a lot of countries, like a good example is Japan and China, they treat, Europeans are mixed people very kindly as kind of visitors to their country. There's also other societies.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to live there because he doesn't want to be a burden to these people.
Well, why would it be a burden? I mean, he can work, can he?
Because he's it's not homogenous anymore, and he understands that, and he doesn't want to be part of it.
What do you mean a burden? Then what is he? I don't understand what he means by that. I need some clarification.
You don't understand mixing. You don't understand race mixing and homogeny. I don't understand it
specifically. How he's a burden, because in a lot of places people don't give a damn. People just feel, they treat...
Well, that's the problem, right? But there's people who do give a damn, and the reality is it matters. Understands it.
I know people that I've met in my academic work overseas, in Eastern Europe, in...
Yes, that's what you talked about last time, and this is a common
example. Can I respond to you a little bit, please?
I know that. I have heard this story. I know this story.
I'm just saying to you that there are certainly some places that people go. I know, for instance, Europeans that married people from overseas, Chinese. I know people that had Chinese also descent. Malaysian. I know people that were married to people from the Middle East, even though a lot of the people from Palestine
don't have to go far. There's a lot in the U.S.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying.
Half of the people, almost.
Anyway, I know people that are married like that, and they do fine in society. They keep themselves right. They're not committing crimes. They're working hard. They're good co-workers, and they have a pretty good life. And the other people, they're not a burden on other people. Other people, only people that's going to see it as a burden are those that get upset because they're present. And I understand that feeling, but you know, we have to also deal with reality, right? I mean, it's not their fault that they came to a country that accepted them. Now, the Jews opened our borders, which they shouldn't have done, and we allowed these Jews to control our borders, and by controlling our borders, open them up to the world. In fact, that's what Jacob Javits, you know, the U.S. senator who is Jewish, proclaimed.
So should we facilitate some sort of option for these people since we are responsible?
Well,
we allowed this to happen.
Yes, I think we do the best we can by understanding that we are a multiracial, multicultural society right now. And for the foreseeable future, that's not going to change for a long time. And it's probably going to get even more multicultural. But there are certain places that people can live in the United States if they are multicultural, or if they're married to somebody that's multicultural.
What are these places called?
They're called communities. They're called cities. They're called...
Any specific ones?
Well, just about... Look, I guarantee you. Look, I'll tell you, it sounds like New Orleans, for instance. So New Orleans, a lot of Vietnamese came in. Some of them got in the shrimping business, and it was very... it really caused... The shrimpers, Louisiana shrimpers, these are good French people, to be very upset because they came in. They worked for lower wages, which eroded their ability to feed their own family when they worked for these bigger shrimping companies and seafood processors. And sometimes they got their own boats and they did work hard. But again, they often, because of what they used to make in Vietnam, and there's a lot of people that had seafood operations in Vietnam. It's Vietnam. Of course, I've been to Vietnam. I've been there. I've been to the coast of Thailand, and it's kind of amazing how the seafood industry they have there. It's quite amazing and good. It's a much. My father used to always say he worked over in Vietnam. By the way, he worked for the USAID, which was building. Hospitals and bridges and so forth and schools to help the non-communists, the anti-communists in Vietnam. And he was a civil engineer doing that. But what I'm saying is that there are people, there are places, certainly. This person, I don't know where he's living now. What country is he living
in? Is there any official places?
What? There's no official place, but let me tell you something. There's so much diversity. You can find it in practically any city, my friend. I mean,
officially. Like,
what?
I'm talking officially.
Well, it doesn't have to be officially. It's just a face of reality.
Why?
Look.
People are so dominant in these areas. Why couldn't it be official?
Because, first of all, the government didn't see any reason to make it officially a mixed area.
Yeah, we know that it's twos, but I'm talking ideally. I'm talking about ideas. I'm talking about a vision. I'm talking about goals. And it's just we have to have a goal. We can't, you know, be in the reality and just be stuck. We have to dream bigger than what is right now.
South Africa had a system under apartheid where they had areas in South Africa that were primarily Indian descent, and they had their own kind of culture that they wanted to preserve, and their religion or their own culture and their own people. And they had different Asians that had the thing. They had also a group for colored that didn't want to be with the blacks nor with the whites. And they also allowed them to have their own societies or one areas. But the way I think it is in the United States and most Western countries is you can find places, whether you're in Paris, France, or whether you're in Hamburg, or whether you're in whatever city that you practically are in, there's going to be significant numbers of people that you want to associate with that are closer to what you feel comfortable for. And you can find those communities. And the only suggestion, if this guy is not comfortable, in the general atmosphere, he could probably find in any major city in the United States. I know in New Orleans, you have a very vibrant Vietnamese community. You have a vibrant Chinese community. You have a vibrant, I can just keep going on, Mexican community, South American community, Cuban community. There's a lot of Cubans in New Orleans that came up after the Bolshevik or the communist.
Yeah, yeah, there's communities, but I'm talking more officially.
Well, first off, the taxpayer right now is pretty burdened by a lot of things, right? So do we need another government program to give all
support? There's not going to be any taxpayer left at one point, so it doesn't matter.
Well, that's exactly right, right? And without taxpayers, you're not going to have any government money. But I don't understand what we're arguing about here, because I'm just
Look,
I'm trying to get a point through. I don't know why we can't communicate better. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to interrupt you, and I'm not trying to in any way denigrate your opinions and your thoughts. We don't have to have an official government program to start paying people to associate with themselves, right, and others.
Well, we don't. My call is running out, but I have to reload.
Okay, but what I'm trying to say, you can listen to my response if you like to, if your call runs.
Yeah, yeah.
But
Henry, you want me to give you the link? You can come in the show, and it's free.
Sure.
Okay, I'll send it to you in Telegram.
Oh, that's good. Okay, so we'll talk to you later, Henry. But okay, so the idea is this. All right, what does the guy need? Does he need friendship, companionship with people that he wants to associate with, who he decides that he feels more comfortable around? He can find that in this country. He can find it in Canada. He can find it in any other country, probably of Europe, just about. And it's like, I don't think we have an excessive problem here with him having that ability. It's not going to affect his ability to have a job and find work to support his family, his children. It's not going to affect his ultimate freedoms. If he becomes an American citizen, he'll have a right to vote. He'll have certainly other rights according to American citizens. And so I don't see any special reason to be concerned about this. Now, if the guy was suffering some sort of indignity or some harm to him, that's one thing. I don't think that's a real problem. If the man wants to associate with his own, the way the America changed to such a diverse country, we used to be a 90% European American country. And that was fine for me. It was fine for our ancestors. All we wanted to do in 1924, when we passed the Immigration Restriction Act, was preserve the percentages of the populations in America. We weren't trying to mimic it all white. We weren't trying to make it, you know, mostly black or mostly Mexican or whatever else. We just wanted to preserve that issue, which was a pretty fair solution to the issue. It wasn't like white supremacy was going to be the law of the land, right? It wasn't like we're going to destroy the black community. It was not like what Israel does to the Palestinians, right? But by the way, Israel, that the Jews decided that the only way they could support Israel and the Jewish cause globally, because these are globalists, Jews are the ultimate master racists of the world. They want to control the entire planet.
Dave, we got questions.
All right, they want to dictate to the whole planet and to make every human being live under their tyranny of the holy seed, what we talked about earlier. And they want Noahide laws, which are laws that will control what your faith is. You have no freedom to have your own religion or your own opinions about religion or philosophy, your own rights, that you'll be ruled over by a bunch of Jews who, you know, will absolutely destroy you and destroy your family and create a world of evil. So this is what we have going on right now in the world. This is the reality of what's going on in the world. It's Jews trying to take over the world.
That ties into the next question, kind of.
Good. Okay.
Dr. Pepe asks, when Iran is reduced to rubble, what new threats will Israel be concerned with now?
They already made clear their threat. I mean, they want everything, right? So Toffoli Bennett, actually, who was former prime minister, probably be the next one after Netanyahu goes. He's already said the big enemy now that we got to deal with after Iran's gone is Turkey, because Turkey's got even a bigger military than Iran, you know, has got, you know, it's a more powerful country. It's a stronger economy. And these are dangers to them. And they got to deal with it, you know, Turkey. With these Jews, it's endless war. It's endless war. And it's an endless war because this tiny sliver of humanity, if you call it that, 1/5 of 1% of the world thinks they're superior and deserve the right to rule over and tyrannize. That's the word for it. Terrorize and tyrannize and harm and control the other 99.8% of the planet's population and have total Jewish rule and Jewish control and sovereignty over the mind. And the problem is with this modern AI and modern robotics and this control they have over the internet and the digital world, they have more means of absolute control over the minds of people than any tyrant in any nation. They'll track you and your phones. They can eventually, they're going to have your cars rigged so they can disconnect your car where you can't even start it if they don't want you to go anywhere. They'll literally be able to take all the money out of your bank account, only get to announce it to you, and then seize your money,
next question,
right? And keep you from even buying food that you need. This is tyranny, total tyranny, unless we recognize this threat to humanity is coming to this world. Anybody with any sort of clear thinking and understanding of the nature of Jewish evil and Jewish supremacism, this ultimate, this is the master race theory to end all master races theories.
We got Robert on the line. Go ahead, Robert.
Go ahead, Robert.
Hi, Dr. Duke. Thanks, Dave. Dr. Duke, you said in your program that you believe that God is a God of love and mercy and forgiveness.
Yes.
And I agree with that. But then you went on to say that God is not a God of wrath and vengeance. So I looked into that, and I don't know how true that is, because even in Thessalonians, where it says, you know, the Jews are opposed to all men, and finally the wrath of God has come upon them at last.
Yeah.
And a few other places talks about the wrath of God, and I believe the vengeance is mine, says the Lord, is in the New Testament too. I'm not sure if that's in the New Testament, but I looked into that. I just don't know how true that is. He's not a God of wrath or vengeance.
All right. Well, let's talk about that. That's a good subject, and we should make some clarity here, okay? Yes, God is certainly not supporting the Jews. And Jesus Christ, his whole ministry, his whole preaching was about the danger that Judaism represented for Jewish people themselves. Because if you really look at the Old Testament, their God, supposedly, according to the scribes, according to those who were able to cast God the way they wanted to cast him, was murdering tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Jews regularly, including, I'll give you an example. I just was doing some research for an article I'm writing right now, and I can show you in the Old Testament. I can even pull these articles up for later in the show to share with you. I can pull up the passages. You might not even believe this is true. Passages in the Old Testament where God actually says Jews violated certain aspects of the law, and therefore they're going to punish them and their children to the third or fourth generation. And God's going to condemn them by making them eat their own children, literally. Now that sounds unbelievable. And I know it sounds, that can't be in the Old Testament. It is in
it
the
sounds
Old
like- mindset, yeah, Pharisaic mindset for sure.
All right. But Jesus Christ brought a different idea of a God. Jesus, and the New Testament says that Jesus is a God of total goodness and total light, whereas the Old Testament God of Yahweh is often portrayed as a God of good and darkness, light and darkness. Jesus is portrayed as a God of just complete light, complete goodness. There's no case in the New Testament where Jesus kills anybody. There's no case in the New Testament where Jesus curses anybody to have plagues. He doesn't give anybody any plagues. When some of his disciples get upset because they were turned away from a house where they were trying to preach to, right? The disciples, Jesus Christ's own disciples said, well, we need to do what happened in the Old Testament with Elijah or whatever it was, sending out thunderbolts, sending out fire and burn these people. And Christ looked at his own disciples and he said, have you learned nothing? Have you learned nothing of what I'm teaching you? This is exactly the opposite of the message we're bringing. He says, I come not to destroy anyone. I come not to hurt people, oppress people, harm people. I come to save people. I come to heal people. I come, you know, to be something. Christ would never even say to someone, okay, if you disagree or you're not ready to be converted, well, I'm going to burn you alive or something. That's something that Yahweh might do in a New York second, right? If you have a different opinion. Even Doubting Thomas, I've told this story on this show before. Doubting Thomas was one of his most favorite disciples. And after Christ returned to the earth, the story is in the New Testament, that he went and saw Thomas, and he loved Thomas. And when Thomas saw Christ, time had gone by, and Thomas said, listen, I'm not sure it's you. Is it really you? I want to believe it's you, but I'm not certain it's you, and I want to be sure it's you. You know, it's so hard to believe. You're back. I believe you're back, but I just want to be sure, right? And now the Old Testament God might have started just, you know, burn him alive right then, or just knock him dead, right? But Jesus said to him, he said to Thomas, sure, Thomas, I think, you know, come here. So he comes to Jesus, and Jesus takes his hands and puts them on his wounds, the side which was pierced, you know, the nail marks on his hands and wrists. And Thomas says, oh, thank you, Lord. I so appreciate it. And Jesus said, thank you very much, Thomas. He was happy to do it. He was happy to show him, to reason with him. So Jesus gives people an option. Right. And he doesn't threaten people with eternal punishment either. He basically said the wages of sin are death. You know, that's bad enough when he offers people eternal life. So it's kind of interesting to see these contrasts that Jesus offers.
Yeah, very, very well. Very well done. I'm still not totally convinced about that, but I'm going to have to look into it more. But thank you for your
convinced
work.
About what the cannibalism.
So the wrath of God, he's not a God of wrath. He's not a God of vengeance.
Well, no. Jesus spoke against the Pharisees. He said, you are the sons of the devil. The lusts of your father he will do. You have to understand that Judaism, starting in the Hasmonean period, changed from what it was before into a radical rabbinic Judaism, which was ultimate anti-mankind. And in fact, it says that the Jews are enemies of all mankind. They hate all mankind. They keep us from teaching to the Gentiles, these Jews, and the Jews killed our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, right? But Jesus wasn't saying that we're just going to start killing all the Jews. He just says that, you know, we have to oppose that institution, and we should. He wasn't saying to murder everybody individually, and certainly he understood that not necessarily all Jews believe that way. However, there is justification for standing against an institution. For instance, the idea I've been hearing, I saw the program with Tucker Carlson, where he said, you know, we can't, you know, it's not all Jews or something like it's to just say this by their race and treat people by according to their race or their heritage. Well, that's not the issue here. The issue is every institution, like if there were French people who were putting France ahead of America and getting us involved in wars, killing our people, are supporting world wars like the First and Second World War, And the French were doing this in contravention to the interests of the European people or the interests of any people. If that was going on, we'd say these damn French to start that war. That'd be natural. And Jesus himself said the Jews. That's what it says in Thessalonians. It says, quote, the Jews killed our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and killed the prophets and despise all mankind, are contrary to all mankind, and keep us from teaching the Gentiles they might be saved. So it's okay to understand that if Jews are hyper-racial supremacists, which they are, and Jesus was opposed to that. And I'll tell you the truth, I am too. I believe that every people has a right to determine their own destiny, wherever they are in the world, whatever people, including our own. I'm not going to be a hypocrite about this, but we are not allowed to do that. Jews are, right? Different other people. If whites started moving into an African country and dispossessing them, well, you know what would happen? That would be called white racism, white colonialism, or whatever, and been presented as evil. But if we're replaced in America purposefully because the Jews want to replace us, now why do Jews want to replace?
Dave, we got to get to the other question.
White people in America. I'll answer this one sentence, and I'll be finished. Why do Jews want to replace white people? Because anytime they replace, oh, say, a white person in business or media or whatever society, in at a university, for instance, with a non-white person, that lessens the unity of white people. And if a country is united, conscious of its heritage, wanting to preserve it, it stands as a block, a stumbling block, right, for the Jews who are trying to take over America. So naturally, they want to make whites a smaller, ultimately a minority in the country of our fathers. And then all they have to do then is weaponize the non-white people by saying that the whites are oppressing you, which we really are not. We're trying to do things for them, even though the Jews have created a system that's harmed them. That's it.
Okay, thanks, Robert. Okay, buddy, bye. Okay, next question, Dave. All right, here we go. Hold on. Robert's gone. And here's the question. It ends in the word two. T.O., this is from Stramovich.
Okay.
Dr. Duke, I was reading about Emil Maurice, who was SS member number two and co-founder of the SS, serving as Hitler's first personal chauffeur and bodyguard. He had Jewish ancestry, and Hitler personally signed off and made him an Aryan. What's your opinion on Hitler's order and which specific individual Jew and Negro you'd grant an exemption to?
That's a good question. Well, one thing he didn't do, he didn't put any of these Jews in control or a position of leadership because we've seen a history of betrayal and deception by them. Even the Talmud itself says it's a meritorious thing to deceive and cheat and lie to a Gentile. And that deception and that subversion has been present among Jews for years. They did that under communism. It was the Rosenbergs that sold their atom bomb to the Soviet Union, which is at one time Jewish controlled. And it was killing Christians by the millions, by the way. So he didn't do that. But he was also a person that had humanity to him. And the guy he worked with was a driver, which is a decent man. He had a decent family. He may have had some Jewish ancestry, but he identified with the Germans. He supported Hitler, and Hitler was sure about him. And so he helped him have a decent life, you know. And that's because Hitler was much more of a human being, really, than a Jew are. So I'll use one more example of that. It's a good example. I talked about Rabbi Schneerson, and he said, is this a Gentile? Is this a human? And his answer is no, they're a lower animal, and we can do whatever we want to, because we can do whatever we want to animals, right? I mean, you can't make this up. Hitler, when he encountered a Jew, he talks about this in Mein Kampf. He says they encountered a Jew in Vienna, and they had these earlocks on, and they needed a little water, apparently, and a little soap. But they were absolutely seemed like very alien, and he knew their role in communism. He knew their role in the subversion and criminality and organized crime. And they knew they were not going to put Germany first. In fact, the way they dressed and the way they acted and the things that, and the Judaism that they practiced, which is extremely racist, as we talked about earlier, because it was that way in Germany at the time, too, when Hitler grew up. And so what did he say? He said, is this a Jew? Is this a German? In other words, he said, is this a Jew? Is this somebody who's going to put the interest of the German people and German heritage and German economy and German values first? It's the same question that people are asking today about Jews in the United States of America. Wouldn't you agree? What do you think, Dave? And what do you think anybody out there watching?
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go to the next question.
So that's a good example of the difference between somebody like Hitler and somebody like Netanyahu or somebody like Schneerson.
All right, next question.
Yeah.
This ends in the word law. This is from Celtic Nomad.
Okay.
And I have heard of this book, and I have it, the PDF. Dr. Duke, it's in Hebrew. Have you heard of the King's Torah?
Yes, I have.
Written by two rabbis.
I've read some translations.
It discusses circumstances in which Jews are allowed to kill Gentiles under Jewish law.
The same guy that took part in writing that book wrote an article in Jewish Week. Jewish Week is the biggest Jewish publication. I don't know if it's as big now as it used to be. We're back in the print days before the internet. But Jewish Week is the biggest circulation Jewish newspaper in the world, actually. It's based in America. And they had an English edition, a Hebrew edition as well. And they had a guy named Yitzhak Ginsburg. And he had a role in the King's Torah and in those radical organizations. He actually moved to Israel later on. He used to do a column in the Jewish Week every week called Halakhic Questions. Halakha law is the Jewish law and the Talmud. And so he talked about a hypothetical situation or what would happen in a real situation. He says this. He says, if a Jew needs a liver, would it be just and right for a Jew to stop an innocent Gentile on the street and take his liver if a Jew needs one? He answered that question, hypothetical question, by saying, of course he would, because Jews are special. Jews are the kingdom of God. They're all godlike creatures, you know, and it's fine to take a man's liver. Now, take a man's liver is to kill him, by the way, murder him, steal his liver. I mean, that's horrendous to even think about. But this is in the biggest Jewish newspaper in America. That wasn't edited out. That wasn't, you know, that wasn't even vastly condemned. And it seems to me, if you would have had a newspaper of any Christian leader or any other leader in this country, or any major newspaper in America that would say a white person or anybody say, would it be okay for a white person to kill a black person and steal their liver, is that right? And then the answer is, yes, of course it would be, because whites are so superior. That would have been front page of every paper in America, right? I mean, obviously. And the condemnation would ring from the hills, which it should come, ring from the hills, because that's a horrible, incredible, vile thought, anti-humanity. I mean, one thing that I learned as a kid, I was reading some of the stuff that was in the 1840s by some white writers. This is a time during slavery. And one thing that really disturbed me, because, you know, I knew I didn't have any friends that were blacks, really, but I did have a housekeeper who was my family's housekeeper. And she was a wonderful Christian woman. Her name was Pinky, believe it or not. And she, my mother had some great sickness. And while she was sick, Pinky took care of me and, you know, took me for walks or whatever. And she was a very kind woman. Her mother and I, my mother and I and sister often drove her home in the middle of black ghetto. That was when it was safe to do that years ago before blacks were weaponized against us. And when she died, by the way, my mother and sister and I were the only white people at her funeral, and we were treated quite kindly. But I read this thing from the 1840s, and it was by some white guy who was openly saying he believed in white supremacy. And he was talking about how that a black kid or a black woman or a black male, that they had no soul, or they just, it sounded like the Jews say that white people have no soul. And I think that's
not white people, all people except Jews.
Yeah, all people. That's right. Not just, but of course, that also implies white people as well. We got to be sure we understand that. And by the way, no white people should be under the illusion, under the deception that it's just Palestinians they don't like, or Arabs they don't like, or Samaritans they don't like, or whatever you want to say, Lebanese they don't like, or Iranians they don't like. They really, the evidence is overwhelming that they hate white people more than any other race. And the reason for that is two reasons. One is the person, the personage, the life, the person they hate the most, and this is no doubt about this, and it's clear in the Talmud, it's clear in the scriptures. They even did a book called the Toldoth, which is a made-up book about how evil Christ was and born of a Roman soldier, you know, in adultery with his mother. It was just a horrible thing, right? And they also had Jesus boiling in excrement, which I've talked a lot about, where they raised him from the dead, that Jesus is the most hated person on earth, and Christians are the most hated. And the reason for that is it's the same reason that the Talmud, and you can read about this in the Talmud, and you can read about this in the Jewish Encyclopedia, which was the biggest compilation of Jewish thought and principles in the whole world. It was 1906. It was it's the modern age. It's in the first part of the 20th century, but it was clear. In fact, they write about the fact that the Jewish Encyclopedia was a very, you know, very open, and it was long before the political correctness, and they were writing really about the true positions of the Talmud and the Torah and the Kabbalah and all these things. And it says in there that, it says clear, there's a whole article in there on Gentiles and how the Talmud says, and also the Tanya, so-called Tanya, the Zohar, which is the book of the Kabbalah, and Kabbalah, that these books of the Jews, as well as the Old Testament, by the way, says that Gentiles are just made to be servants of Jews. And the Gentiles had to bow down and literally lick the dirty feet of Jews and bring the wealth of all their nations to Jews. I mean, it does say that. Now, I've got to make it clear to you, and it's got to be very clearly identified, that this is definitely overturned by Jesus Christ. That's one reason why they hate him, because Jesus said there is no holy seed of Jews. There is no chosen people. All people are worthy of the benefit of God, and God has no favorites. He has favorites only by how righteous that you are and how you live by his laws and rules. And his laws and rules are that you can certainly preserve your own heritage, which I certainly believe and want. But at the same time, you can't purposely cheat people, steal from people, hurt people, bear false witness against people. And the Talmud is a religion that preaches that specifically, that you can cheat Gentiles, and it's a good thing to do to cheat Gentiles, and that the best of Gentiles must be killed, just like the best of snakes must be killed. That's what they were doing in Gaza, by the way. They were finding through AI the Palestinians who were writers and media people and smart, you know, and educated and doctors. And they're the ones who are the targets of the Jewish murder campaign and even the targets of rape and torture in the Israeli dungeons. That's really truthful. And we're talking the truth here. So this is part of their, it's hard to even believe the depth of the evil that is in the existence. Judaism is the most, it is the ultimate master race, genocidal, tyrannical, and evil theory and institution. They really believe that they're going to take over the whole world, and they're going to totally control all the world, and they're going to destroy anybody who's their opposition. In fact, the Noahide laws will make somebody who's a Christian, again, that's people they hate, that they are going to suffer. Any Christian will be beheaded. They'll get the capital punishment provided by the Noahide laws for idolatry, because they say Christians are idolaters.
Dave, Do you know anything about Shakespeare?
I know a pretty good bit about him. What about him?
Well, Not Kosher Salt, who's a host here on FDJ.
Yeah.
She said in Macbeth, Jews and livers were even referenced in Shakespeare. Liver of blaspheming Jew.
Well, I don't remember that particular passage. I have read Macbeth years ago, but maybe that was before I became awakened on the Jewish question, so it didn't register with me. But the one thing that you really can do, and this is an interesting subject, this is something I'd like to share with all of you. There's even been some movies that are amazingly produced that are pretty honest about Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice play. And the Merchant of Venice play, and by the way, if you read it, you know, again, you probably read it sometimes in school, and Jews couldn't suppress it. They tried to, by the way. They banned it in New York City when they controlled New York City because it said it's anti-Semitic. But because of the fact that everybody now was making copies of everything, they couldn't suppress it. So what they did is they tried to misinterpret it or reinterpret it to mean that, because what they did is they took the speech by the main characters were Antonio. There was also Shylock. Shylock was the Jewish usurer, right, who loaned money, which the guy borrowed it to, say, help his friend who was getting married, and he needed a dowry and so forth for the woman he was trying to marry, a rich family. And the Jew made him sign a bond where if he failed to cover the money of the loan, that he would suffer, where the Jew could take a pound of flesh out of his body, which is pretty vicious because he had a hatred toward Antonio, because Antonio spoke against some of the Jewish power in Venice at the time. So this is an amazing thing. Now, there is an amazing video you can find of this. You can still get it. It's finding Al Pacino as Shylock. And I'm trying to think of the guy that played the part of Antonio, but a lot of major actors played in this movie. And it's a movie that has a very good ending. It's an ending where our side wins and Shylock loses. Shylock loses everything because he's so rapacious and so evil that even though his friends, he offers to repay the loan even two or three times what he borrowed. But Shylock, because of his burning hatred toward Gentiles and this man, says no. He says, I want my pound of flesh. That's where they always talk about pound of flesh, right? And so it's very vicious, right? And he's sharpening his knives to take his pound of flesh. But then a very brilliant juror, attorney, who's trying to defend Antonio, goes up to him and he says, yes, you're a very learned person. So, yes, you're entitled to your pound of flesh. And so he's sharpening his knives and can't wait to take his pound of flesh from the Gentile. And then the attorney says, you have one problem, though. You're by the contract, you can take a pound of flesh, but you can't take even a single drop of his blood. And if you take a pound of flesh and he expires, of course, then you'll be guilty as well. In fact, if you take a drop of blood, you're guilty of a horrible offense and you will be forfeit of all your lands and you'll be forfeit of your life, right? So go ahead. You've won the case. Go ahead. You can take his pound of flesh. But just understand that if you take one drop of blood, that it's going to turn out badly for you. So Shylock still wants to get his money. So he says, okay, I'll take two or three times the money and everything. And the attorney says, well, you know, he was willing to give you that, but because you're such a rapacious bastard that, you know, you either take the pound of flesh or you're just going to have to forfeit some of your wealth, right? And you're going to have to forgive the loan. It's an amazing video, and also has an interesting point of a woman that wants to marry, and it has also is about a situation. He was so evil.
You got Henry in here, Dave.
What? Oh, Henry's back.
Henry, so he's not on a call. He just came in.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Henry, you know, that is, and I would really suggest this movie. It's very, very interesting. And there is a situation in there that she's got a daughter, and the daughter falls in love with a Gentile boy, Christian. And Shylock ends up losing his daughter as well, loses everything because of his hateful nature. It's a very interesting movie, extremely intelligently done. And Shakespeare and Jewish usury and Jewish evil is laid bare. And this play is considered extremely anti-Semitic by most people. And the only reason that this was even allowed to be done is because of the fact that everybody's seeing it anyway. Now, some of the movie tries to portray Shylock to be really treated badly in the streets. So, like, it makes Shylock more understandable.
Well, everybody needs to see that movie. Let's get to Henry, Dave.
Yeah.
All right, Hank, go ahead, bud.
Yeah,
so everything we were talking about just continued. So why can't we have a mixed race nation, for example? Like, I know you don't like the idea, but I was suggesting it should be in U.S. because in U.S. there's a lot of mixed people already, and this is a new world. It's not like the old world, traditional world, so people moved there recently, so people don't have a blood and soil connection. So it would make the most sense there.
Well, the only way we can have that, and we could have that to a degree. I mean, that's what some of our conservatives in America wanted for a while. But the only way we can have that is by deposing the Jews, because they will not sit still. While say if we would, we tried to get a solution in 1924. Which was the Restrictionist Immigration Act, which passed the Congress of the United States. And what it did was it tried to keep the population. And literally from 1924 all the way to the time when I graduated from college, which is 1974, it was almost a 90% European country. They were able to do that in just this short period of time. And so, you know, that would certainly been a better solution than what we've got going on right now, which is a complete replacement of Europeans. We're headed toward a minority status in America, and we've got Jews that are inciting minorities against us and inciting violence against European Americans on a massive scale.
So where were they planning it? What's the area that they were planning it in?
There wasn't a plan for it. Let me give an example. First of all, New Orleans is a perfect example of a lot of places and cities. You have certain areas that tend to be mostly black or all black, some housing projects. You have some areas that tend to be, in fact, we had areas that were almost all Irish, for instance, in Massachusetts, Boston or whatever. I remember going to South in Massachusetts early on in my Klan career. And we had a lot of support there, by the way. And you have different areas of the country. And if you just gave people the right to sell their house to whom they want, to live where they want, and you know, to understand that people have the right to associate with their own if they like it. They have the right to send their kids to school if that's the will of the people. Both blacks and white people have that right. That segregation, or at least a degree of that, comes about in a natural way. If the way you do this is by, this is how I would say the easiest way to do it, all right? I think most whites want to go and associate with their own people, and they're happy to go to white schools. I think most blacks are happy to go to black schools, tell you the truth, to have the teachers oriented toward black interests. Even W. Du Bois, who was one of these black officials of the NAACP, later left the NAACP because he said he's not for integration, he's for black empowerment. And he would rather see black people going to their own schools and trying to orient to their own teachers, their own values. And that's that's what he believed in, right? I think blacks would be happy with that, and the school's oriented toward their need, and they get a share of the budget just like everybody else, a fair slice of the pie. And then you have, and then you could have, for the few that wanted integration, right, or a mixed society where you can have Asians and blacks and whites, whatever that works out to, those that choose that, you've got the freedom to do that if you want to go to school in a place like that. Now, that seems like to be a solution that basically lets people have the right to choose their own associations and have what they want. I think most blacks would like that, having their own communities and more control of their own communities. I think most whites would want the same thing, their traditions and values to be
Yeah, it would make sense to do all the races together then. If we're making a mixed one, everybody wants their own race, then white people, black people, Asian people, everybody would, it would all happen at the same time. Yeah, it would make sense.
Well, let me ask you a question. I think this makes sense because I think most whites want to preserve their heritage. I do. I think you do. And if whites were around each other going to school together, the likelihood of them marrying each other is much greater. The liable for them to have families is much greater. The right to them having a school where they feel comfortable in and where they can teach the truth about things more apparently than being on pins and needles is fine. And we had that kind of situation in America under segregation. It was more an enforced segregation, but it wasn't segregation. But I want you to understand this, and this is the truth of anyone old enough like my age. When I went to my grade school, I went to school called Claiborne in Gentilly Woods, and they had a school right down the road, right across the viaduct, for a very nice neighborhood, black neighborhood, and they had their own elementary school, right? And they were very happy with that arrangement. And we were happy with our arrangement. So I went to an all-white grade school. They went to an all-white, all-black grade school, which was suited for them. And by the way, in those times, like I said about my family's housekeeper, Pinky, the races got along a lot better than they do today. Dave is not as old as I am. I think he's 10 years younger than me or so. But you can remember a time, even in your youngest days, right, when it was like the races had a lot more peace than we have today. So I don't think it's unnatural for black people in order to preserve themselves. And I want the right to preserve my own families. I want the right for my children to go. I know the differences in crime rates, for instance, between black areas and black children, young black males have 20, 30 times the crime rate as young white males do. And as far as cross-racial crimes, it's like 100-to-1 different. There's 100-to-1 more chance for a black young man, a criminal, like who's only 6% of the population, to physically attack a white person than a white person to attack a black person, even though there are far more white people. It's not, that was, you know, that was even a few years ago when they did this survey for the Justice Department. It was like 74% of the population was estimated to be white. Yet whites, you know, there is alleged 65,000, and this is in the country of 275 million people, almost 300 million. But it was much more chance for a black man to attack a white person than not, right? But still, black people were very happy to have their own schools. So what you have to do is try to allow as much freedom as possible for each race and to get along. Now, there can be long-term solutions,
also includes mixed race people.
Yeah, well, you can have that. That's, if you have a mixed race family, they might want to go to a mixed race school, right? And they've got that right, if that's what they choose. So there you go, right? So white people have a right to go to a white school. They have a right, you know, to go to a mixed race school. A mixed race person has a right to go to mixed race people or, you know, whatever. And people have the right to make their own choices. Now, everybody's not always going to be happy, but I think most whites, most blacks, and most mixed race people are very happy if they could choose to do that. I think that most mixed race people, by the way, wouldn't like to have to go to a black school. All right. Some of them might like to go to a white school. That's true. But I think that most of them would not want to go.
No, I think all of them want to go to a white school. Doesn't matter what race.
Well, that's right. That's right. But let's give people choices, you know? And if they go into a school that's composed of people just like them, right, with their mixture, and they seem to like that multicultural atmosphere, that's not a terrible burden to them, right? All right. If white people want to preserve their particular heritage, I believe that you, Henry, want to preserve your heritage and values. You want your grandchildren and great grandchildren to be like you and the people that came before you and recognize your heritage. And this gives you an opportunity to do that, doesn't it? If you were in a situation that you could go to your own schools and other minorities could go to their own schools. But we have a situation now where, well, I'll give you an example this way. In the multicultural land we live in now, we used to have even segregation in the prisons. And I just wanted to tell you that because I'm a person that went to prison, so I know the conditions there, and I've heard enough stories and seen enough evidence of this, which is shocking. But the conditions for the poor white people that are in these overwhelmingly black prisons is just an offense to God and man. It's horrible what they face. There's so many young white males. We talked a lot about the rape of these Jews against Palestinians and other, you know, non-Jews in Palestine. And they did this as well to even hospital people running a hospital in Gaza, educated, decent people who were raped to death, right? And the idea that this goes on is immoral, and there's nothing wrong, and we know that I remember, all right, I went to a prison. I was in a gulag in America called Big Spring, Texas, way out in middle of Texas, way away from my family. By the way, they want to take you as far away from your loved ones, your daughters, or your wives or your children or your parents or whatever as they possibly can, which is an unusual punishment in itself. Always before, if you ever look at the movies of the past or the books about the past, people go to prison and their wives will visit them, right? And their daughters and children will come to visit them, have a relationship. And you can't have a relationship with your daughter by being able to make a phone call once a month, you know, for 20 minutes or something. That's not good. If you really need to be able to visit your son or daughter or your parents or so forth and keep a connection with them. Also, if you're a businessman or you have a business that you're running and you're trying to keep that going while you're in prison, if you get out of prison, especially if you're in some sort of financial crime or something, if you get out of prison and you lose everything because you can't have any input talking to your people, but they actually forbid you for talking about business. So even though I had a publishing business, kind of like Dave, not as big as Dave's, Dave Gahari's, Money Tree Publishing, but I couldn't talk about any. When I wanted to sell my property or deal with certain issues I had some property in Russia at that time, which was later stolen from me. It's a whole long story. But when I had that property, I wasn't able to converse on the phone. That's a violation of the rules. You can't even protect your property from fraud or theft or anything like that. And that's against the rules, which is ridiculous because you should be able. Now, if you're dealing drugs, that's different. But if you're monitoring all the phone calls anyway, you can find out pretty readily whether you're dealing with drugs or any sort of illegal activity. But they try to destroy you. That's the way the prison system in America works. And it's a horrible thing. But in my prison, let me give you an example, 15% of the prisoners were white. About 15% were black. And about 70% were Mexicans. All right? That's the way it was. And Mexicans are probably the biggest ethnic composite of the federal prisons in this country because of the Mexican drug dealing and illegal aliens and other criminality of them. And some prisons are very black and some prisons in some areas of the country that are very European are different. Now, there was a real problem. The real problem we had in Big Spring wasn't between blacks and whites. I had a dust up a couple times with blacks who were threatening me because of who I was. Obviously, when I first came into prison, they marched me out. The first thing they did when I got to prison, to show you how the government is even though I had a nonviolent crime, as short a sentence probably anybody in their prison, but they sent me out in the middle of nowhere. I was supposed to get a federal camp, which I owed, and even the judge said that I should go to a camp. I wasn't doing drugs. I wasn't doing any sort of violent crime of any kind. And I was sent out to the middle of the desert and incommunicado, basically, because they wanted to shut me up, too, with the media because I was opposed in the Iraq war. But anyway, I'm in there, and it's just quite amazing. So you had a Mexican warden. And the first thing he did when I got there, no bad record whatsoever, no violence, he sent me to the hole. So where most prisoners got out, they were kind of rough in this jail. And that one of the dangers of this jail was that you had dormitory style incarceration. Now, dormitory style incarceration is much more dangerous for a prisoner, even though you're supposed to have a lesser tier of criminal, even though it's not really that way. There were baby rapers in that prison too, but they're supposed to be safer. But if you're among the general population, say you're on a floor full of blacks in there, or Mexicans are in gangs, and they had billboards with my face on it right outside the prison, which all the prisoners could see when they went around, but right by their exercise track, you know, and their the weight pile where we did that. I had some interesting times in the weight pile, by the way. I did work quite well there. I was a very buff guy then. But it was kind of interesting is that they even had PETA ads on there with me with the Confederate flag right behind me. It was just like it's like waving a red flag to a bull, right? A red cape to a bull for these minorities, Confederate flag, David Duke, and they gave me a white mustache, you know, like David Duke drinks milk. See, that's why you shouldn't drink milk. But it still was right by the prison, right? And it got a lot of publicity. And so a lot of the blacks were saying, we got the former head of the KKK, even though it was many years earlier, and long before I even served in the House of Representatives. And they... you know, so there was a few of them determined to kill them. He even has some Jews who actually, I'll tell you this story. It's absolute fact. I've written about it and I have other prisoners vouch for all this. They had this one Jew who was running trafficking women. And these were Ukrainian women and Russian women into America for prostitution. And amazingly enough, he was convicted and he was sent to this prison. And he knew who I was. He hated me. My books were circulating in the prison. Just about every prisoner read them. Most of the white prisoners read My Awakening. I had about four or five copies of that circulating around the clock. For a year and a half, everybody had read it. And the black people were reading more Jewish supremacism, which was dealing more with the Jewish question. The Jewish supremacism is also basically in My Awakening. But it was kind of amazing. So when they put me on, they put me in the hole for the first week, right? They locked me up with two kind of radical Mexicans, but I was very strong then. I didn't have any problem with them. And we didn't even get a chance to shower for the whole week. And, you know, you couldn't get books or it was being in the hole, basically. And then when I was supposed to get out and be released with the other prisoners into the general population, they kept me in the hole for another week without any offense whatsoever. I committed no offense, but they kept me in the hole another week. And so when they let me out the next week, they let me out alone, right? Because all the other prisoners that came in that cycle, all right, had gone out together. But they really were trying to get me set up to get killed, I think, you know. And so they put me out alone to go onto the yard. Now, that was a big event. When David Duke, former KKK leader, was put in that yard with all these Mexicans. They knew that I did the Mexican border watch, right? And the blacks knew that I was former head of the Klan, supposed to be the biggest enemy of blacks in the world. And I really wasn't, but that's what they thought of me. Like, because their impression was the Klan was killing black people. And my Klan never did anything to anybody. Never hard to harm a single individual, and we could prove that. But anyway, so when I came out there, the first thing that happens, I'm, you know, put out there. And so going back to the dormitory where they were taking me back to the dormitory where I was going to have my bunk in an open dormitory with some blacks in it too, and Mexicans, of course. And so a number of blacks immediately began threatening me, saying, "You're going to die. You know, we're going to cut your, you know, we're going to cut your throat. You know, we're going to lock you tonight." Locking is when you put you have locks for your lockers, like a master lock, if you know what that is, like when you're in an athletic dorm or something like that. And they put them in socks, and then they knock a person's brains out, you know, while they're sleeping. You know, they had another thing that they used to do to prisoners is each floor had a single microwave where people could make coffee, you know, or they could also they could use it to heat coffee or to heat some instant food if they wanted some food. It's just one microwave for the whole floor, 180 prisoners on that floor. And anyway, so what they would do is they would
baby put oil.
Baby oil, yeah. Baby oil in the microwave, make oil, boiling oil. And then what they would do then is, while the target would be sleeping, they would go throw oil on their bodies, on their faces and chest and all that. And it was so terrible, it would burn right through the flesh, right through the bone. And when somebody, and I saw people who were victims of this, right? And a couple of people became victims of this while I was there. Thank God I had some good friends there kind of watching over me and just trying to watch over me even when I slept. I had some very loyal, wonderful people there. And anyway, and in one case, they had a black guy on my floor that was the blacks are always having feuds over the drugs or whatever they do. And they literally killed them. They threw boiling up baby oil on them, and it burned them right down to the flesh. And he died, right? It was a horrible death too. He was screaming, and then he was gone, right? So it was like this. So then I learned, and this is interesting. So after I was in there for many months, I knew this Jew really hated me. I knew he was into organized crime and had connections in organized crime, and he hated my guts. He read my book, Jewish Supremacists in My Way. He hated me. And I didn't treat him bad. I didn't do anything. I was willing to discuss anything with that person, Jewish or not, but he hated me. And later we find out, so some of my friends, there was a young man who robbed a bank, believe it or not, in Wichita. I think he was from Wichita, Kansas. And he robbed a bank. He thought it was going to be romantic, you know, like a kid who thinks he's going to rob a bank and get away with it. And he actually did get away with it. He robbed this bank and got out of there, and he got back home and everything. But his parents found the money and turned him in. And this is a true story, right? And because it was his first offense, and he was just a young kid that didn't know better. He must have been 17 years old, whatever, 18. And so he was locked up in the same prison with me. And he was getting out. And so his term was up. So one day, he comes to my friends, and he says to my friends and to me that the Jewish organized crime guy, this is a guy convicted of organized crime. He was an organized Jewish criminal out of Ukraine and Russia, by the way. And so he says that this Jew was telling him that if he murdered my children, that he would be paid whatever, $50,000 or whatever thing he was offering them, right? And the kid was a decent kid, right? And he was stunned by that. He just kind of listened to him for a little while. But he came and reported this to us. He says, I like the work that you're doing, Dr. Duke, and I obviously had to report this to you. So our people there, and we had a little group. Now, when I first got there, one of these white groups, like the Aryan Brotherhood, was offering me to be the head of the Brotherhood in the prison because of my reputation and, whatever. And I declined it because I said, I'm only here for a few months, and all I need is to get involved in some sort of a issue here, and then they have the right to lock me up for the rest of my life, right? So I wouldn't even made the deal to be there as it was, because I knew I was going to get out soon. I can continue my work. In fact, they even agreed to let me go back to my doctorate. I was pursuing my doctorate in Ukraine at the time. And so I did that because I wanted to get back to work. And so these guys went and visited this Jew and said, listen, he said, if anything happens, he said, you better hope that nothing happens to David Duke, whether it be here or any time in his whole life. Because if anything ever happens to him, if he dies in supposed accident, or whatever, he said, you're going to suffer exactly what you're planning for him, but it's going to be you too. We're going to take care of you. If you're in prison, we're going to take care of you. We're going to, whatever it is. And if you do this, or if anything happens to Duke, if anything, and he doesn't live to a healthy older age, then you're going to be first on the list, and we're going to take care of you. If anything dares to happen. And he was really fearful, I think they told me. And luckily that I didn't have anything happen to my kids or happen to me since. It was also a deal, too. It was kind of scary when I went back to Russia. I knew there was a real powerful Jewish mafia in Russia. This is the time the oligarchs were prominent. These were organized criminals. And I knew that I lived in Russia pretty quietly there. But to have one of these Jews who had connections to the Jewish mafia was a very dangerous situation for me. But anyway, I still went back to Russia and I finished my doctorate in Ukraine. And then later I found out the property that I worked on with my bare hands and workers that I saved up for. I bought some property when the property was cheap in Moscow. I knew that they would become worth more. When the country came out of communism, which it did. And so that was stolen from me when I couldn't fight for my rights or defend my rights while I was in prison. There was a fraud going on. An American, by the way, was involved in that. A person that was actually a guy who was a guy I knew actually worked for me at one time in Louisiana. He just stole, But there's a lot of things like that that happen in life. I dealt with it, and then I went back, to Russia, and then I finally decided to go ahead and start over. And I did some guest lecturing in Austria at the Universitat Salzburg with a lot of classes. I started lecturing a number of universities. I had a number of appearances, and I started doing all over the world. I spoke at 10 or 12 universities across the Middle East. I spoke at universities in Eastern Europe. I spoke at universities across Russia. And
we got a bunch of questions.
So okay, cool. Let's go do that.
Let's get to them.
So that's the story, anyway, that I survived, and my daughter has apparently survived, I thank God.
All right. Ready?
All right. Thank you, Dr. Duke.
You're welcome.
Take care. Bye.
Robert, we'll get to you after these questions.
Hope we get that done.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. This is from Klaxon SS, and this ends in the word country. Dr. Duke, this would be a great time for you to be interviewed by Tucker Carlson. Is he calling out the Jews in his kooky, innocent acting way? If Tucker called and wanted an interview with you, and at this time in your life, would you call for pogroms in the United States to save the country?
I'd call for the human rights of the American people, and obviously still the vast majority of the American people, the European Americans, to have their rights and not be ethnically cleansed in their own country by this gaggle of Jewish supremacists who were a threat not only to white people, but the blacks who lived here, the Mexicans who lived here, and to the whole world, using America as the bludgeon. And Hank can tell you this, America is the bludgeon that's destroying Europe. And that's another issue that we should touch upon very quickly here and go to the next question, but we should touch on quickly the fact that you understand, folks, see, this Iran war is not just a war against Iran. It's a horrible war against Iran. It's a vile war against Iran. It's a murderous war and a war against Hezbollah and the Lebanese and a war against the Gazans, men, women, and children. But it's also a war against Europe. It's also a war against America. Because Jews are destroying America and the European American people, the Christian people of our country and Europe. And in every way, think about what's happening right now, right? It's like, think about, for instance, the Ukraine war.
But Dave, what would you call for pogroms?
No, I wouldn't call for pogroms because that would be suggesting that I would be in favor of just locking up every individual Jew in a prison or whatever, killing
right.
them.
Okay, all right. Let's so get to the next question because we're running out of time.
I definitely call for justice.
Right, but not pogroms. Okay.
Example, if I were president of the United States, every damn individual that we can identify and prove, and it's easy to do if you have a Justice Department's in our office, prove them guilty, whether they're Jewish or Gentile. Every one of these leading people, I believe that Epstein, obviously, he, and by the way, he wasn't charged with enough crimes. Neither was Ghislaine Maxwell.
You'd make it right, but let's well, to the we're running out of time. No, you all wouldn't do the like you wouldn't Ghislaine, do the pogroms, right?
Just one more second. Okay. Dershowitz, you know, he had to be aware of these crimes. You don't get out of reporting a person that you've defended in another case when they're committing crimes against children that you know about, and he had to know about it. He had his own shorts on when these young girls were giving him massages. Now, he said he kept his shorts on, but he had to know. If anybody, yeah. He had to know, obviously, what Epstein was doing, but he should be going to jail because right. he didn't report this. All and right. then you have Dave, all the other ones. Louder, who
I know, we're going to arrest them all.
Aaron Barak was head of Israel.
All right, Dave, we got to get the question.
And he should have been prosecuted by the United States.
All right, I know. Of course he should have, but that's okay, this is from Shermovich. It ends in the word different. Yeah.
Excuse me, forget
Dr. Duke, do you remember when Americans learned of the My Lai massacre? Is it the same as Americans learning about the criminal destruction in Gaza and looking the other way, or was it different?
Well, here's the situation. We shouldn't have been in Vietnam. And not just from the fact that there were things like the My Lai thing, and there was a lot of mass destruction for the Vietnamese people. The Vietnamese people, I believe this, were they Marxists? Yeah, they were Marxists. You know, they believed in the principle of a common society and so forth. And they didn't want Americans to control their country. And you know what? I didn't want the Jews who were running America to control our country then either, right? I don't blame them nowadays, all right? I thought, you know, I was anti-communist, but I didn't blame. Well, later on, I realized that why should the Vietnamese let a bunch of Americans control them and keep them from being unified in their own country and deciding their own future by themselves? Just like the Jews are keeping us from deciding our own future. What we have are these Jews, this is going back to the same issue we just talked about, that Israel and Jews are destroying Europe right now by doing this war. And because Iran's fighting back smartly by doing this war, they're destroying the industry, the businesses, the lives of countless millions of Europeans. We blow up the pipelines, which gave the Europeans cheap energy. And now because of that, They're losing their economy, and they're losing. When you lose your economy, you lose your lives. You lose it. Every drop in a GDP of 1 point causes tens of thousands of lost lives in a society. You realize that, and we have to understand that. So, yes, this is, you know, this is the biggest evil. And you know, it's like this. It's wrong what happened to that school. It's wrong, this massive bombing using massive chemical weapons and so forth in the jungles of Vietnam. It was wrong what happened at My Lai and the killings of women and children, you know, and we shouldn't have been there. And it was wrong what happened to 50,000 Americans dying in a land war in Asia where we shouldn't have been. And the reason why we're in Vietnam, it's the same problem we're talking about every day around here, right? It was because at that time, Jews were aware that Russians in Russia were starting to overthrow. In fact, they were in the process of overthrowing their Jewish communist masters. They still had a hammer and sickle they were flying, but they're open to churches. They, you know, they got, you know, they were definitely rising up. And the Jews knew that they would be a great threat, as they have become a great threat to Jews. That's why we got to Vietnam for no reason.
Right. Yep, we got one more question, and we'll get to Robert. Okay.
You got it. Same problem.
All right, here it is from Stephen. Right. Does Dr. Duke have a favorite cinematic or theatrical version of Shylock?
That's my favorite one, Al Pacino. And the, also the actor that's got the real deep voice has played in a lot of things. He was the voice, I think, of the bad crazy monkey, you know, in the original Disney show Lion King. I'm trying to think of his name anyway, but he's in it, and Ray Fiennes, a lot of people. Yeah, I think that was the best. I think it was a magnificent movie, actually. It was an incredible movie that really exposed the nature of Jews. And it was just quite amazing to see it, right? It was amazing to see a movie like that produced by Hollywood and starring a leading actor displaying a Shylock. Another movie I really liked, Hollywood movie, that I found a lot of value to was the movie called The Scent of a Woman. And that also starred Al Pacino. And it was really an amazing story about a man who was a Vietnam veteran, and he was blind because he made some mistakes, and he was drunk and got an issue. And he was a very irascible guy, but there was a young kid going to a military-oriented school, a private school, and he was a poor kid, came on scholarship. But there were a lot of the rich kids in the school, and the corruption of the school was that they were going to deny him a scholarship because he wouldn't give up his buddies, right? He wouldn't rat on his own people. And ultimately, he made a relationship with Al Pacino. It was an amazing scene, some scenes in this movie, even though he was kind of a rat fink in some ways. But Al Pacino came to his rescue, and it was one of the best speeches I ever heard in my life when he defended this boy. He said, "You're running a rat ship here, teaching people to be, you know, rats, to, you know, to betray their own comrades." That's a great movie. And there's some scenes in there which are incredible. One of the most amazing scenes was when he's blind. So this guy is blind as a bat, right? And there's a woman waiting for a boyfriend to come in. And he's blind, but very debonair. And he goes up to the table of this woman, led by his friend who's taking care of him, being his chaperone. This is the kid at school. And he goes and asks the girl to dance the tango with him, and he dances this tango. And it's like one of those mesmerizing scenes you see in a movie, which was incredibly amazing and beautiful.
Was it made by Jews?
Huh?
Was it made by Jews?
I don't know who made it, but whether they were Jews or whether they were Gentiles or whether they were Martians, it was a good film.
Right? Jews, Martians, same thing. Let's get Robert while I'm looking for the information on who made that movie. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi, Dr. Duke. I've been debating my AI on whether racial diversity within a society harms social cohesion or a spiritual fruit, what Christians would call spiritual fruit. And it basically admitted being structurally bigoted. I mean, it was locked into a conclusion and barred from considering contrary to evidence. Supposedly,
well, let me tell you can I make a suggestion to you? Right? I understand what you're saying. And here's what you have to learn about AI, okay? You have to use the nomenclature of the left, right? And critical theory and all the nomenclature of the left. And if you frame things in the right way, you can get the AI to look into the data, which may validate your point. But you're not going to get that information if they think that you're just a white racist or a white person who's just concerned about, you know, white power or something. So the way you do that is you point out, put on your scholarship hat, right? Point out that you're a student at a major university and you're dealing with some professors and you're a believer in diversity, right? And you want to see people getting along with each other, and you're concerned about they're not allowing diversity in this country, right? And diversity is facilitated by allowing people to continue to preserve their own particular cultures and don't do color our racial, so to speak, generation or take people's cultural heritage by allowing people to be diverse, right? Now, if you do that the right way, I bet you can have AI ultimately saying, yeah, we got to have diversity. And yes, it's wrong to deprive people of their own culture. Now, if you start off by saying, that's just an idea, just a thought for you.
All right, listen. Stremovich got us that clip. Hold on there, boy. Hold on there, Robert.
I'm gonna be like they
talk now, Robert. Hold on.
I'm not saying you did anything wrong, Robert. You did good things. I mean, and you can get AI to coordinate with you and flesh out some of the facts of issues. But you got to be clever.
I tried to come off.
Robert, we're gonna play a clip, buddy. We're gonna play a clip. All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Stremovich got this for you, Dave. He figured you'd like it.
Okay.
I don't know what it is, but by the way, that movie was made by a Jew from
whoever
the Bronx.
It was interesting.
Martin Brest, I think his name is. All right, here we go.
You know what I'm going to do, in as much as I can't punish Mr. Havemeyer, Mr. Potter, or Mr. Jameson, and I won't punish Mr. Willis. He's the only party to this incident who is still worthy of calling himself a Baird man.
Yeah, because they're selling out their fellows.
I'm going to recommend to the disciplinary committee that you be expelled, Mr. Sims. You are a cover-up artist, and you are a liar.
But not a snitch.
Excuse me?
No, I don't think I will.
Mr. Slade.
This is such a crock of shit.
Please watch your language, Mr. Slade. You are in the Baird School, not a barracks. Mr. Sims, I will give you one final opportunity to speak up.
Mr. Sims doesn't want it. He doesn't need to be labeled still worthy of being a bad man. What the hell is that? What is your motto here? Boys, inform on your classmates. Save your hide. Anything short of that, we're going to burn you at the stake? Well, gentlemen, when the shit hits the fan, some guys run and some guys stay. Here's Charlie facing the fire, and there's George hiding in Big Daddy's pocket. And what are you doing? You're going to reward George and destroy Charlie.
Are you finished, Mr. Slade?
No, I'm just getting warmed up. I don't know who went to this place. William Howard Taft, William Jennings Bryan, William Tell, whoever. Their spirit is dead, if they ever had one. It's gone. You're building a rat ship here. A vessel for seagoing snitches.
Even
if
so,
you think you're preparing these minnows for manhood, you better think again. Because I say you are killing the very spirit this institution proclaims it instills. What a sham. What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today? I mean, the only class in this act is sitting next to me, and I'm here to tell you, this boy's soul is intact. It's non-negotiable. You know how I know? Someone here, and I'm not going to say who, offered to buy it. Only Charlie here wasn't selling.
Sir, you're out of order.
Out of order? I show you out of order. You don't know what out of order is, Mr. Trask. I'd show you, but I'm too old. I'm too tired. I'm too fucking blind. If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place. Out of order. Who the hell do you think you're talking to? I've been around, you know. There was a time I could see. And I have seen. Boys like these, younger than these, their arms torn out, their legs ripped off. But there is nothing like the sight of an amputated spirit. There is no prosthetic for that. You think you're merely sending this splendid foot soldier back home to Argon with his tail between his legs, but I say you are executing his soul. And why? Because he's not a bad man. Bad men. You hurt this boy, you're going to be bad bums. The lot of you. And Harry, Jimmy, Trent, wherever you are out there, fuck you too.
Stand down, Mr. Slade.
I'm not finished. As I came in here, I heard those words, cradle of leadership. Well, when the bow breaks, the cradle will fall, and it has fallen here. It has fallen. Makers of men, creators of leaders, be careful what kind of leaders you're producing here. I don't know if Charlie's silence here today is right or wrong. I'm not a judge or jury, but I can tell you this. He won't sell anybody out to buy his future. And that, my friends, is called integrity. That's called courage. Now that's the stuff leaders should be made of. Now, I have come to the crossroads in my life. I always knew what the right path was. Without exception, I knew. But I never took it. You know why? It was too damn hard. Now, here's Charlie. He's come to the crossroads. He has chosen a path. It's the right path. It's a path made of principle. That leads to character. Let him continue on his journey. You hold this boy's future in your hands, committee. It's a valuable future. Believe me. Don't destroy it. Protect it. Embrace it. It's gonna make you proud one day, I promise you.
How's that, the phone going?
That's so true, too. You can't, they offered to buy it. You can't buy it. He wouldn't sell his integrity. And that's what happens to most people in this country, right? It should speak out today.
The disciplinary committee will take this matter under advisement in closed session.
They don't need a closed session.
What are they doing, Charlie?
I think they're going to come to a decision now.
Apparently, that meeting will be unnecessary. Mrs. Hunsicker?
The Joint Student-Faculty Disciplinary Committee needs no further sessions. They have come to a decision. Messrs. Havemeyer, Potter, and Jameson are placed on probation for suspicion of ungentlemanly conduct. It is further recommended that Mr. George Willis Jr. receive neither recognition nor commendation for his cooperation. Mr. Charles Sims is excused from any further response to this incident.
Hoorah!
I don't care who wrote that speech. It was exactly what people face today, and there are lessons in that speech we can learn from.
But it's a movie.
I know it's a movie, but that's not the point. It's about a guy, all right, who acted. It's the same thing that Hitler talked about, by the way, in Mein Kampf and in his background. He said when institutions try to get their students to rat on their classmates, right, their friends, their associates, that they're absolutely betraying, they're teaching people to be traitors to their own country. Because if you can't stand by your brothers and sisters, you can't stand by your brothers. And by the way, the line in that speech, we could learn from that line. A lot of white people need to learn from that line. And what was the line he said? He said he was not willing to buy his future at the cost of his integrity. He was not willing to follow that path. And the guy was teaching, you know, he's this ex-colonel and who's blind. And he says, you know, a lot of times I didn't take the right path, right? I had a lot of issues. And he said, I came to the crossroads and it was just too hard to do. And this boy didn't. And by the way, there's a lot of other people that I know in my life who took the right path, who came to crossroads many times. I came to those crossroads all kinds of times in my life, in a whole number of different aspects. And it was very hard, but I tried to always take the right path, and I've never given up that right path. And so that there was a lesson there, which was good. A Jew can write a good song. He can write a good prayer. He can do whatever. He also write a bunch of crap, right? And he can be evil and do evil things. But also, they know what sells a movie. And that speech right there is something that the average person would identify with. And it encourages people to take the honorable path, to not sell out what you believe in and your traditions and your values and your friends, right, to buy your future from very powerful people who want to corrupt you. That is a great lesson, and I'll stand by that lesson. And I don't care who wrote that lesson. That's a good lesson we can all learn from.
Well, yeah, you're right, but I'll show you who did, okay?
I don't care.
No, I'm going to show you. That's the Jew. That's a Jew who pulled on your heartstrings.
Well, right, so I don't give a damn. Yeah, why should I worry about that?
I do.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't. Yeah. Listen. All right. I'm not saying that these Jews should be writing our movies. I'm not saying they do. But at the same time, that particular speech was a good speech. And it was something that was telling the truth about something. There's very few speeches in media today that do that. So am I supposed to condemn this guy? Now, maybe I think that speech helped that movie win, you know, a lot of support from people. And it helped sell tickets because people tell their friends about it. But that doesn't mean it was a bad speech. And that was a good lesson for people not to sell out your people, your friends, your very heritage, your very country, and buy your future, as so many people are doing in our society. And that speech was about not selling yourself out. That was the lesson. And I'd rather not even to see this ugly Jew, you know, about it.
You want me to take him down?
Yeah, take him down. I want to see it. Because I just listen to the talk. I listen
In real life, that guy would have made that talk, and they still would have voted to expel the good guy.
Not always. I've seen some miracles take place.
We don't get justice.
Let me tell you something. I had six people running against me. They all outspent me, many multiples to one, right? The media was against me, made me into the most evil person that you could possibly imagine, right? And they had all these people who were powerful people. The governor's brother, brother of the prior governor of Louisiana, Republican, was running in the race against me.
He came in second. His name was John Treen. People who were sitting on boards. And here's this guy coming along, former Klansman, running for the House of Representatives, right? Talking about things no other people would talk about. Talking about these insane wars, talking about, you know, what was going on in terms of the affirmative action, the discrimination against white people, about the immigration that was destroying our country, and the fact that we had to stand up for our people, right? And it was hard to believe it, you know. It took a lot of people, not much money. We had an army knocking on doors, and we had a very well-run campaign. And we literally had, I went door to door. I talked on almost every door in the district. And it's a big district, right? And
Dave, 10,000 doors. We're 10 minutes over.
So. I know. I don't care. It's all a right. Pretty good comment.
So, yeah, we got other shows, though.
This is, okay, I'll get off in a second.
5 minutes.
I didn't even need that much time. But right. I went to 10,000 doors, and I very quietly, first in the person, and they saw me. They looked in my eyes. They knew I was sincere. They knew I was going to tell the truth. You know, they respected me. They saw and understood what I was doing, right? And a lot of these people, even though a lot of them were people that had jobs at major corporations or they had positions in the police department or fire department or whatever, which was endangering themselves to vote for an ex-Klansman. This is before I got elected anything, by the way. But they all agreed to put yard signs, not all of them, but most of them. So we had a number of crews of good volunteers. We organized it very powerfully. Had these beautiful Duke signs. These are those classic blue and white Duke signs, right? It was white letters, you know, David Duke, you know, representative, whatever. And it became an icon, right? And one day after our crews went out all night long, people woke up to see Duke signs everywhere. It was like Dukeville, every other house practically, it seemed like. And these signs really stuck out the way that we designed them. So they really kind of made an impression. They stood out more than any other side, just by the way they were constructed. Again, that's where the mind helps you win things. But anyway, so they all did this, right? And when that happened, that's why I won, because people realized that they were not alone. The media was telling them that everybody was going to be against me. I was a former Klansman. They certainly can't vote for me. But they saw that when they saw their friends and neighbors and family members and people they respected put my sign up at risk to their own career and their own life, they realized, okay, we can do this. We've got to do this. We've got to change the way this country's going. And that literal event, right, of those signs and that winning that election was the source of the biggest change in American politics. That was the beginning of MAGA. That was the beginning of the change in the Republican Party and people understanding about Jews. We are the ones that broke the thing on this. Long even before Buchanan, I was campaigning against the war, you know, in Iraq and so forth. So it was like this was a turning point in America, and I don't think we'd have the revolution going on right now among the young people, except for the things that we accomplished by making these forays into the enemy's territory and winning this election.
So I agree, buddy. So I agree. We'll pick it up next week.
Got it.
And thank you, Dave. Great show. And thank you, audience. It's always great to see everybody. And thank you for making the show what it is. And we'll see you.
I don't care if that guy looks like a big giant hairy spider or a big giant dirty elephant or a dirty Tyrannosaurus Rex. It was a good speech with a good message. And I want more people to hear that message. We don't get that every day in the movies.
That's right.
I'm thankful for that message.
All right, buddy. Have a good night, Dave.
You got it.